Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition in here in October of Warrior Connection. Last week, we talked about some pretty heavy information. We had discussion with Dan Sullivan on the Sergeant Sullivan Center. Extremely important. The Sullivan Center is dedicated to improving medical care and information and research for all the veterans affected by all the toxic exposures. So again, go to SergeantSullivan.org and do what you can to help that foundation. Incredible work. Well, tonight we're going to have a little change of pace. Sometimes we talk about real heavy-duty stuff, and sometimes we got to go back and have a little fun. So today we're going back into the library world and talk about different things. I've got a great author with me. We got a librarian online, and we're going to talk about writing in the library and in kids' books and everything and all this kind of stuff. Well, our guest today is Ron Hoffman. He's a retired farmer. He lives in a small town here in Illinois. He's retired from the University of Illinois. Also was involved in animal science and dairy science at the U of I. So he's been taking care of animals for many, many years. And what we're going to talk about is a cat. He wrote a book about a cat, which is kind of neat. Ron, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, speak up good. Okay. What's your book's title?
It is called Mr. Lucky.
Mr. Lucky. Wow. And Mr. Lucky, I got a picture here. He's a beautiful cat. He's a real cat, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Kind of got some gold in there and some brown and some white. He's got some neat face and everything. So I'm looking at a picture of Mr. Lucky. Well, how did this cat, I mean, Mr. Lucky, how did he get a name like that, or where is he from?
Well, it's just the fact that several times he was lucky to survive, and lucky I brought him home. And lucky he survived some more problems, and that's basically how he got his name. Nothing else fits so well.
Mr. Lucky. So he's basically a research cat at the University of Illinois that's been rescued to your farm, huh?
That's true. That's true. I used to take care of him along with a number of other cats, watch post-operative how they did after the operations, and make notes for the investigators, surgeons, and in his study, he was just most unusual. Had the opportunity to take care of a number of kinds of animals, but as cats go, I cared for hundreds, and he didn't meow. Even when he was operated on, when he came to, he didn't do the usual things that cats do. He was so I knew he was a little different there.
A different cat. Now, in a research cat, these cats are not used to the human or the normal world, are they?
Well, it depends. But in his group, I think that was true. He didn't understand. He had never been out free or seen the things that a normal animal would. As far as he didn't know what the sun was, he didn't know about a breeze, any of those things. So he had to learn those things when he came home with me.
So that's pretty neat. So you brought this cat home with you, and then all of a sudden you made a decision. I'm going to write a kid's book, huh?
Well, I kept an old habit. I kept observation notes. I had on things for years and at work. And I just continued with him when I brought him home. And I was sitting down going through him one evening after about a year. And I realized that this could possibly be interesting to someone who had never experienced this before. Because I had everything written down. And my wife, who is a retired English teacher, encouraged me to write about it.
That's kind of neat. Holly, are you there with us?
Yes, sir.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have Holly Thompson also with us. She's the director of the Rand Toole Public Library. You guys would be, Warrior Connection would be familiar with her because she's been involved where we've had in the past when they did their local East Central Illinois Local Authors Fair. Holly helped us set up all those and interview all those authors that came on the show. So now we got another one. We got another local author that wrote a kid's book. Holly, how important are, you know, kids' books and animal books for the kids? Do they really enjoy these?
Oh, absolutely. Animals are always popular. That's something that holds true through the decades. Some fads come and go, but animals, kids in every generation love animals.
So when you're setting up and looking for a good book, I mean, you know, as a librarian, you try to find, obviously, you know, what's a good book to put in your library, and obviously you guys got a big author signing fair and everything coming up for this book, you know, where it can feature this book for everybody here in East Central Illinois, and if anybody can come at, from any place that want to come to this thing. When you look for, you're looking at a book to put in your library, what kind of things do you look for? How do you select books to go in the library?
Well, one thing that's real handy is book review journals. There's a school library journal, which is where we get a lot of our kids' book reviews from. Booklist is another one that we subscribe to. So we use the reviews of other professionals who've written the, usually they're librarians who write for those ones, and we rely on that. For our local authors, we try to get what our local authors do. So those ones usually aren't ones we're getting from reviews. Sometimes we've made contact with the local authors, or we might have patrons coming in and telling us about them. So we really try to hit those pretty heavily as well.
I mean, we're really lucky here in East Central Illinois because we've got the University of Illinois, one of the great universities in the world with the most incredible libraries. And we got Parkland College, and we got several other colleges in the area. Eastern Illinois is not too far apart way from here. Illinois State is not so far apart. So you really have a treasure trove of writers and authors and books to choose from, don't you?
Yes. When we first started doing our local authors fair, we were astounded by how many authors there are right in our area. The idea was put into our brain by a lady named Gail Butler, who has since passed on. But she was a writer who lived in Rantoul. And she kept saying, you guys should do a local authors fair. And eventually, one of the other staff members here, Violet Lepine, it took this idea and ran with it, and it's gotten really big. We've been doing these local author fairs, and we've been really surprised by how many authors are in the area, and there's quite a few here right in Rantoul or Fisher, such as Mr. Hoffman, and you don't have to go very far at all to find your writers.
It's pretty astonishing. Ron, how did you get into writing? I mean, you're an animal scientist. You're a farmer. How did you get into writing?
Well, when I was in high school, I had an English teacher that encouraged me to write. She thought I might have some ability. through time, as I went on to school and the military and other things in life that came along, it got set aside. One of the things I wanted to do when I retired was give this a try and see if I could write something that particularly children would enjoy.
So that's kind of fun. What did you do in the military? When were you in the military?
Oh, that would have been, I went in 1969 in the United States Naval Reserve.
Wow. So right there in the middle of the Vietnam War, you were in the Navy Reserve. Did you get deployed or just luckily stay locally and do training and stuff?
That was primarily it.
Were you in college at that time?
Went to school a lot.
Were you in college at that time?
Up to the point where I quit and joined.
Well, welcome to Warrior Connection. I mean, here you're a real warrior, and now you got a connection, and we got a library connection. Hey, Holly, when you have all this stuff, like you're going to have this thing where you're going to have Ron come and have a book signing and all kinds of event at the library, do the kids and the parents get excited, or is it everybody getting excited? Do the kids get more excited, or the parents get more excited, or is it general excitement?
I guess it's general. I've seen it probably more with the adults getting excited, but the kids do too sometimes. So, yeah, I suppose it's overall.
You know, I had one thing in the past, and this is we're really lucky because I'm right here and we coordinate together so much. You've had the opportunity when we go in and you have these readings and you get the real author reading their book the way it was written. That's something else. That is very special, isn't it?
Yeah, we've done that at the local authors fair in April, and we're actually going to have another opportunity for that We just had a gal who graduated from Rancho Township High School who moved to Texas but has since come back to visit her mom, and she read for our story time this week to the kids in the story time, a book that she wrote herself. And this coming Thursday, we're having another author who's internationally known who's going to be here reading from her own works at our story time on Thursday at 10 a.m. So if you're in the Rancho area, that's a great opportunity. The gal who's coming this next time is called Kaiko Kaza. I'm not sure if I pronounced that quite right. I haven't met her yet. But as I said, she's internationally known. She's won awards. So it's really a great opportunity for anyone in Rancho to come in and hear her read from her own works.
Well, that, and the other thing, too, which we've been fortunate, we have one of the great Lincoln scholars here in Illinois that's done, you know, book signings and reading from his book at your library, hasn't he?
Oh, Mr. Guillory, yes, he has, and he's been a great speaker. We've really enjoyed his programs whenever he's been able to make it out here.
Yeah, because he's brought insights. I know I've been to the programs and, you know, read all his books and everything, and the insights he brings into the great president, Abraham Lincoln, who trod this very ground where we're sitting, gives a lot of insight for the people. It's kind of a different story, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's been another exciting thing about getting to know all these authors, because everybody has their own specialty or viewpoint. One person will do these great picture books that you can really escape into, and another one, like Mr. Guillory, has the actual factual stuff, so you're learning while you're reading. And so it's just really exciting, the variety of works people are putting out there.
You know, and then we've got our local author who was, in law enforcement and everything, and does investigative journalism, and she's written some incredible books. I mean, one about the Harris that ran the News Gazette in Champaign, and about Southern Illinois. So, I mean, there's another one where you have real life investigative research, police level research at solving crimes, that then get put into books, and that's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, yes, and that's Maureen Hughes is the one you're referring to now, and another nice thing about hers is her books are especially affordable, or at least they have been in the past, so that's been a little easier on the budget, too. So sometimes books can get really expensive for families, so it's nice when you can get the ones that they were able to publish them for less money.
Yeah, well, Ron, I've got your book, and I'm sitting here. It's right in front of me, and it's called Mr. Lucky by Ronald Hoffman. And this is published by Tate Publishing, the children's division. That's exciting. I mean,
it is.
Honest to God, children's book publisher.
Yes, it is.
How did you find them, or did they find you, or what happened?
Well, I just started, and I didn't have any particular place in mind, so I just started looking. I started out on the internet, went as far as the Better Business Bureau, these folks kept coming up with in high regard.
Did you have the book all written when you went searching, or did you search and then write the book?
No, I had the book written. I had started it. I would say usual things on a first book. I wasn't sure what tense I wanted to use, how far I wanted to go, and what I've heard before. I'd like to write a book, but I don't know how to start it. That I had all those issues. My wife was kind enough to inform me of a one-day class, if you will, at Parkland about new authors. I went there, and in the first 10 minutes, I knew how to start this. So it was well worth the effort. I started the book. I had an illness. I had to stay home for a little while, away from people. And as soon as I was pretty solid, I just sit down. And while I had to sit there, I finished this book. And it was a real good time. I enjoyed it. It took my mind off of the ouches, and I learned a lot as I went.
So we're looking at Mr. Lucky. You've got another book that you're just finishing or is getting ready
finished
to come out?
It is at the publishers. They seem to like that one. The first book, Mr. Lucky, is a nonfiction. The second book is fiction, a little bit older age group, and I could have a little more fun with it.
Holly, when people are searching out a publisher and they've written a book, is it usually where they have a book that's all written and they search out a publisher, or they have an idea for a book and then they search out a publisher, or how does that work?
From what I've read, with fiction books, they tend to have them written already, and with nonfiction books, they're more likely to query with their idea. Now, I don't think that holds true necessarily across the board, but in general, I think that's the way it goes.
And how many times, I mean, when you're running individuals or working with individuals or writing books, I know Rantoul Public Library has had, as part of the local authors fair, you've had a lot of workshops where you brought people in to help people learn how to do research, how to write, how to edit, and all this kind of stuff, don't you?
Yeah, the workshops that since we've been doing the local authors fair, some years we've done the workshops and some we haven't. We have different ways we've tried to do it, and it's interesting because some people really love the workshops best, and other people like the readings, which you had mentioned. And it gets too much to do it all at once every year. So we've kind of mess around, and one year we'll do the workshops, and one year we'll do an author's tea where you get to meet them. One year we did a panel discussion. So we've done it different ways. But they all seem to have benefit to different people.
That's always kind of neat. Well, Ron, we got the book right in front of us, and this might be fun. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a live book reading here on Warrior Connection. This is a first, Ron. So go ahead. You want to read the book the way you wrote it for us. Ladies and gentlemen, Ron Hoffman, retired animal scientist, University of Illinois farmer out of Fisher, Illinois, and Mr. Lucky. Go ahead and read, sir.
Okay, today is the day, the day that I take cat number 14 home with me. I am excited. I have not had a cat of my own to care for since I was a boy. Cat number 14 has lived in a research facility for cats at a large university for almost a year. He has lived in a small cage since he arrived there. He was taken from his mother as soon as he was old enough and sent straight to this facility to be experimented on. He has survived and passed his exit physical. This means he's well enough for adoption. The research facility is where I met this cat, you see. I work there and take care of this cat and many others. Kitties there don't have names. They are given an identification number when they arrive. This kitty is number 14. Part of my excitement is that I get to give him a name. What fun to pick a name that fits him, and I get to do this myself. Whatever name I want him to have. Oh boy. At home, we have a nice basement, so I made a special place for him with a big cage so that he feels at home. I have water and food ready for him when we get home. He also has a scratching post and a big, soft, fluffy bed that is all his. I can't wait for the end of the workday so the kitty and I can go home together. To me, this kitty is different than all other kitties. He is very handsome with orange and white fur and golden eyes. He never complains and doesn't meow. In all the time he has been here at the facility, I have never heard him meow. All the other cats have plenty to say. He is also very neat. He keeps his cage neat and cleans his fur every day. The end of the workday is here. I have number 14's carrier and head to his room. I open his cage, pick him up, and hold him. He's really soft and likes me to hold him. I put him in his carrier, and out of the building we go, on his way to a new life, a new home, where he will be cared for and loved every day for the rest of his life.
And then we have an illustration with Mr. Hoffman carrying the cat out of the research facility. Continue.
I'm really looking forward to showing him his new home. When we get home, I take him straight to his new cage. He goes in his cage and tries to hide. I'm afraid all the new things were too much for him. The best thing I can do is leave him alone, so he can calm down and settle into his new surroundings. It is all very confusing for him, but he is a very brave kitty, and I know he will be okay. This gives me time to think about what his new name will be. And number 14 thinks, wow, this is scary. I just want to be alone now. Think of all the names you could give a boy kitty. I want to give him the best name I can that best describes him. He is very handsome and brave. He never complains, and he likes people a lot. He has also survived being experimented on, and he is lucky that I adopted him. I wonder what to name him. What would you name a kitty like this? Maybe you can help me think of the best name for him.
And there's another picture, and it's kind of like pawning and thinking again out of the great thinker statue.
4 days have passed, and number 14 has calmed down. He is eating his food and drinking his water. He cleans his fur and washes his face. I think other kitties would be jealous of him if they could see him. He always looks like he has his best fur coat on and uses his best kitty manners.
He's sitting there, another illustration. He's drinking milk, eating food out of his bowl.
Today it's time. Kitty number 14 meets our dog, Siggy. Siggy is a black Labrador retriever. Siggy is short for Sigmund. We only use that name, Sigmund, on special occasions like Christmas and Thanksgiving. He likes it a lot and uses his extra good manners on those days. Siggy has wanted to see what new animal is in the basement, so I open the door to the basement and say, Siggy, let's go see our new kitty. He is okay with that. He always wants to find new things. Siggy goes straight to the kitty's cage. He puts his paws on the front porch of number 14's cage, which is about 4 feet off the floor, and puts a big doggy smile on his face. Siggy puts his big nose against the door of the cage and sniffs. Kitty number 14 looks at Siggy for a few seconds and then comes to the door of the cage and touches noses with him. They are both smiling. It is easy to see they like each other. I don't know if kitty number 14 knows how lucky he is to have a new home he now has and a new friend like Siggy. Hey, wait a minute. That's it. Kitty's name should be Lucky. But he's too neat and proper for just the name Lucky. He is Mr. Lucky. I like that name. It fits him perfectly. From now on, his name is Mr. Lucky. What name did you decide on? Was it Mr. Lucky, too?
And here's another picture illustration with the dog in the photo.
This morning, Mr. Lucky is at the cage door waiting for me. I can't wait to get up each morning and go take good care of him. I give him clean bowls each day with fresh water and fresh food. I also clean his litter box and cage floor every day. When you have a pet, it's important to care for him properly. As I begin to take care of these things, something new happens. Mr. Lucky is looking at me and meows one time. Holy cow, his first meow. It is very gentle. I can barely hear him. I open the cage door, take him in my arms, and pet him. He starts purring and rubs his head against me. I sure am glad I brought him home. Siggy wants to see Mr. Lucky, too, so I put Mr. Lucky on the floor beside Siggy. Siggy is so gentle, I know Mr. Lucky will be safe. And he is. Siggy sniffs Mr. Lucky until he sneezes, a big sneeze that blows back the fur on Mr. Lucky's face. And Mr. Lucky thinks, what a blast. It's a good thing my fur's on tight. Off they go. Mr. Lucky following Siggy up the stairs to more new places. Siggy teaches Mr. Lucky all about the new home and how to play. After they're tired of playing, the day ends with a peaceful nap for all.
And here's a picture of the dog and the cat. The cat's in his cage and the dog is kind of looking at it.
Mr. Lucky climbs onto my lap every day to take a nap. He smiles as he purrs and sometimes even snores in his sleep. Today, after he wakes up, he begins to stretch his muscles. And as he stretches his front legs, his claws come out and they stick in my sweatshirt. He stops stretching and tries to understand what has just happened. In the research facility, Mr. Lucky lived in a metal cage, so he did not need to use his claws. I help him release his claw hold on my sweatshirt. He's puzzled about what just happened. He decides to stare at his paw and makes his claws go in and out. He is just discovering that he has claws. I can tell he's thinking about them, what to do with them. I take him to a scratching post that I made, and I show him how to use his claws. Mr. Lucky is thinking, and he's learning. Mr. Lucky's scratching post has a place on top for him to sit or lie down. He waits for me to show him how to climb to the top and if it's okay to do so. You see, Mr. Lucky is very polite and well-mannered. What a kitty. Soon his muscles grow stronger from climbing, which is important for his health. As he lies on the platform, he watches as his claws go in and out and smiles. Mr. Lucky thinks, this is really cool. If this is what kitties do, I like being a kitty. I think I'll take a nap now. Maybe I'll dream about all the good things that are happening to me.
And a picture of the cat on Mr. Hoffman's lap.
The house is quiet. I am in my office working, and Siggy is lying beside me napping. I hear a faint noise in the basement. The noise moves to the stairs. It has to be Mr. Lucky coming upstairs after exploring the basement. As he starts across the linoleum floor, he is galloping. This really makes a lot of noise for a kitty. It sounds like thundering paws. Mr. Lucky gallops straight to where Siggy is sleeping and sits down right on Siggy's face. Mr. Lucky's eyes are bright and shiny and full of mischief. He just sits there for a minute, and Siggy does not move. Then Mr. Lucky gets up and tries to get Siggy to play. But Siggy doesn't want to play. Mr. Lucky goes off to do more exploring. Siggy sneezes loudly. I look at him and see that his face, which is black, has orange hair on it. He rubs his face with his paw and sneezes two more times. Then he lays his head back down, wags his tail a few times, and goes back to sleep.
And we have an illustration of the dog sneezing with the orange fur on the dog's nose.
It is evening at our house, and I am sitting in my favorite chair watching TV. Mr. Lucky is on the couch. Mr. Lucky jumps off the couch and goes to one of the windows to look outside into the night. Kitties have very good night vision. I see Mr. Lucky staring at something outside. His tail jerks back and forth. He puts his nose on the window and meows. Then I see what he sees. There is a kitty outside, and the kitty is here to see Mr. Lucky. They spend several minutes looking at each other. Then the outside kitty leaves. The outside kitty does not have a home. The kitty looks cold and hungry. The next night, the kitty is back to see Mr. Lucky again, and Mr. Lucky remembers. Mr. Lucky is kind, gentle, and likes all people and animals. It does not surprise me that the outside kitty comes to visit almost every night. I decide that if Mr. Lucky can be so kind to this outside kitty, then I should be kind to the kitty too. I put some food and water outside. The kitty eats the food and drinks the water every day. I sure am glad Mr. Lucky showed me how to be kind to others. I realize that is how I would like to be treated if I don't have any friends and I'm hungry and thirsty. What a fine kitty Mr. Lucky is. I'm glad he's my friend.
And a picture of the two cats looking at each other in a window.
I have discovered that the outside kitty is a girl, and she is around 1 year old. After she eats and drinks, she likes to sit outside with my wife and me for a few minutes. Mr. Lucky sits in the window behind us and watches everything we do. Today is different than other days with the outside kitty. After she eats, drinks, and sits with us, my wife and I get up to go into the house and the kitty follows us to the door. She comes in the house and Mr. Lucky is very happy to meet her. She likes Mr. Lucky. Everybody likes Mr. Lucky. They are friends right away, but she still isn't sure about Siggy for several weeks. My wife says the new kitty's fur is the same color as smoke, so she names her Smokey. That's a good name for her.
And a picture of the two cats.
We take her to the veterinarian to see what she needs to keep her healthy, just like we do with Siggy and Mr. Lucky. Now Smokey has a name, a good home where she is safe, and a family to love her. As the months go by, Smokey keeps teaching Mr. Lucky how to be a kitty. Mr. Lucky likes that a lot. Siggy watches over both kitties and worries about keeping them safe. Mr. Lucky is sitting on the platform on top of his scratching post, looking down on all of us. He knows he is loved, cared for, and part of a good family. When Siggy's tail moves, Mr. Lucky's eyes become bright with mischief, and I know he's going to attack.
And a picture of all three animals together.
The end.
This is kind of neat. I mean, Holly, when you're reading a book or parents are reading a book to the kids, what's important?
Well, it's important to fluctuate your voice. Sometimes people, especially if they don't read very much, might be tempted to kind of read it in a monotone, which it doesn't get the kid excited. But if you put a lot of emotion into your voice, it makes it more exciting for the child. If there's sound effects you can do, especially for the children's books, like if there's the wind, you can make a wind noise, or the, you know, a roar for a bear or a dinosaur. So that type of voice inflections and getting the kids more involved really helps a lot.
Ron, what level of reading? I mean, this book is for little kids. What age group are you aiming at here?
The publishing company said up to 8 years old. I think it varies by the child.
Yeah.
And the primary intention was just what Holly was talking about, for a parent or a teacher to read this to children, or, of course, children can read it if they want.
Yeah. So, Holly, it's real important to start reading early to kids, isn't it?
Yeah, that definitely helps with their literacy skills later on in life.
So what? How old? I mean, when a kid's, what, 1 or 2 years old, they can always start picking up stuff and learning. So when you're going to start reading, the earlier you can start reading to the kid, the better off it is, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Even babies get a benefit from it. It helps them to hear more words. When they're starting to talk, their vocabularies will get a lot bigger, a lot faster if they've been read to.
So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different books. This is a fairly short book, and it's a very nice book, and, you know, it's a real book. So we've got, obviously, this is a nonfiction book versus a fiction book. Could you describe the difference between nonfiction and fiction?
Nonfiction is typically true life. It's more factual, while as fiction is made-up stories. However, in a library, sometimes you'll see a little more crossover than you'd expect. For example, here at our library, and this is typical of public libraries, we use the Dewey Decimal System in our fairy tales. Even those are made-up stories, but they're filed in the nonfiction section. So it's something to watch out for. In general, nonfiction is true. Fiction is made up, but not necessarily, it's not as strict and defined as you might think when you're actually looking at where the books are shelved.
Now, you talked about the fairy tales, and the fairy tales, I mean, we go back, they come all the way back to antiquity, and those are probably used to what, teach morals and life lessons and everything else, aren't they?
Yes, that's true.
So that gets more fun. We're looking at the book here, and, I mean, Ron's got a whole bunch of acknowledgments here, and I'd like to read this myself. My sincere thanks go to Dr. Jane Hill and Dr. Jennifer Miller for helping me keep Mr. Lucky alive and well so I could tell you about his life and his adventures. He would not have survived without them. Thank you. In addition, I'd like to thank my wife, Janet, for encouraging me to write about this very special kitty, Mr. Lucky. I mean, how old is Mr. Lucky?
He's 10 now.
He's 10.
Yes, he is.
Wow. So, I mean, he came to the University of Illinois for research just as a brand new kitten?
No, he was, I think, about a year old.
About a year old.
There. Yes.
And then how long have you had him at home then?
9 years.
Wow. So he spent 1 year in research and now 9 years living with you.
Yeah, 8.5, 9 years, yeah.
So how has he adapted and everything? Did he have a hard time adapting coming out of a research facility to a farm?
He did. You had to be very careful and patient. And my philosophy with an animal like that is there's no reason to be in any kind of a hurry. Work at it at their pace. And he's still learning. But he's come a long way.
So this cat, obviously, he's living in a cage, living in inside. Did he have an idea of the outside world, or was that all totally new to him?
No, he doesn't understand it. He does now a little bit. I take him outside with me in a restricted area so he can experience the wind and the sun and the birds chirping and all those things. But as far as roads and automobiles and dangers that are there, he has no idea. He just wants to be friends with everything and everybody.
That's kind of neat. Holly, when people are looking to find a publisher for a book, what's the important things that you have to find or to look for that?
Yeah, if you're doing that, you definitely want to do your research first. There's some publishers that just aren't as good to the writers, and if they have a poor reputation, that can reflect badly on the writers. So that is something to look into. We ran into, I remember one of the local authors talking about they had gotten with kind of a bad publisher, and then the bookstores and libraries and other places didn't want them to come in because they had had problems with that publisher. So if you can maybe look them up online or check with the Better Business Bureau, that's really helpful because there's a lot of really good ones out there, but there are some who are, some might lean towards scams or some might just not do good quality work.
So it's stuff like that. So when a person starts to write a book, I mean, obviously it depends on what type of book they're going to do, but they've got to gather a lot of information, do a lot of research, and figure out what they're going to write and how they're going to write, don't they?
Yeah, it's a lot more involved than people think. One thing they recommend is that you get an editor, even if you're just starting out. If you're trying to get it published, you should really have someone edit it instead of trying to edit yourself. Because everybody, if it's your own work, it's a lot harder to catch the mistake because you'll read it, as you're reading it, you'll read it how you know it's supposed to be and not see the little typo in there. So that's another thing to look out for. So there's really a lot to it.
Now, you ran to a public library, and a lot of libraries, most of them have, don't they have writers' workshops or new writer fairs and everything together where you can come in as part of the library events and actually read your writing and people can critique it and everything?
Our library does that. We have a writers group that meets on the second Tuesday of every Monday. It's the second Monday of every month at 5 p.m. here at Rantoul Public Library. That's common for libraries. A lot of libraries do that, but not every library. A lot of libraries don't, too. So you have to check with your local library and see if they do or not. If they don't, you might suggest that they start one up. If you're a writer, you could volunteer to lead the group, and chances are your library will be delighted to work with you.
That's kind of editing a book is pretty difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't have experience with that myself. I have a friend who's done that, I said I don't have experience, but I forgot. Back in college, I wasn't an editor, but I proofread text for a college professor of mine, and it was a lot more labor-intensive than I expected. So just from that little experience and from talking to my friend who's done it, yeah, I think it's a lot more intense than people expect before you do it yourself.
In a kid's book, illustrations are really critical, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and publishers tend to, some people do illustrate for their own books, but that's uncommon. Publishers tend to not like that unless someone's already known for both their artwork and writing. In general, publishers advise people if you're doing a picture book not to do the illustrations, not to find your own illustrator. Just submit the text and they'll find an illustrator to pair you up and match you with. So that's how the big publishers tend to do it.
So when you're publishing a book, I mean, do you have to get a lot of help from all over the place, huh, Ron?
Well, as Holly, I would agree with everything Holly said. Fortunate enough, which I was, not so much by skill, partially luck, to get a good publisher to start with, a lot of your problems don't happen. They do... I think very good illustrations, and I'm very fortunate that I'll refer to my wife again. She taught high school English, and I have a resident editor and a resident spell check. And she gave me some good advice. Said, don't worry about spelling. Don't worry about grammar. We'll clean it up when you're done. Just think about what you're going to write.
I think it's the one thing I know, Holly. I mean, all of us have discussed this before, but when you're kind of writing a book, you write a book from the heart, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of which, National Novel Writing Month is just around the corner. That's in November, and it's called National Novel Writing Month, but really even people in other countries are also participating in it, so it's become international. But it's something where just they encourage just regular everyday Joes like you and me to start writing on that novel you've always dreamed about. And the whole goal of the program is to get people to try to write a novel in a month. And if you're going to do that, that's such a huge task. You don't have time to try to edit yourself. You just have to sit and write it and worry about editing later. And that really frees people their creative side more if they aren't bogged down trying to get their grammar right. They can just get with their story and get it all out. And then after it's all over, go back and find their mistakes and correct them then.
Do you find, how has it changed? You've been running a library now for a few years and all this stuff. How have you found the difference as far as use of a local library in various communities? I mean, you obviously keep in touch with other librarians. Is the use of the library increasing or decreasing, or do we see the computer and TV interfering with the use of a library?
Well, I know it just kind of changes things. Here now, back before the internet, probably people were mostly coming in for the books. Nowadays, we have a lot of people in our town who come in for the computers so they can get on the internet. So in a wealthier community, I don't know, maybe their numbers would be going down because of that. Maybe people are, you know, doing the internet from home and not coming to the library as much. I'm not really sure. I can't speak to that since that's not where I live. Here in Rantoul, though, we have a lot of people coming in for the internet. And then sometimes once they're here for the computers, then they'll notice the other things we have. Oh, you have DVDs, too, and the books. And so they might broaden their horizons then and get library materials that they wouldn't have otherwise if it wasn't for that internet connection drawing them in.
Yeah, it's real important. So how, when, you know, library, obviously, they got all these different programs. Wherever you're at, it's important to get involved. I mean, the Warriors were looking at the soldiers. I mean, this is family time and getting everything connected. I mean, one thing we've all learned, Holly, and I know you really emphasize it and your staff emphasize it, is this whole family connection with reading and writing and participating, don't you?
Yes. We try to get families involved. And, you know, as you know, Doug, since you live in Rantoul, this is such a great community for that. Some families are just really excited about the cultural things going on in here, and we have lots of people who come to the library to volunteer and want to help out the community. So if your community, if you are dissatisfied with that, I think if you check in and try to volunteer, maybe say, you know, I noticed this other library has this program and you don't have it. Would you like me to help you start that? Most librarians are going to be happy to work with you and excited to have someone to help them out with their programming. So if your library isn't currently offering it, I would say go talk to your librarian and maybe you can get something started.
Well, at Rantoul, library is really fortunate because, I mean, you're on the former Chinook Air Force Base, which had a 75-year history in the U.S. Air Force, and you're only blocks away from a major Air Force museum. And then you also, don't you have a totally unique resource at the Rantoul Library as far as aviation?
Oh, yes. We have a Korkowski section. This was donated by the family of James Korkowski, who was an astronaut from Rantoul. And when he died, his family and friends got together and donated a lot of money to make this beautiful special collection for us. We have a flight simulator where people can come in and play on the computer. It has the pedals, the foot pedals, and everything, and the stick that you'll be using to fly an airplane, so it's a really beautiful simulator. We have some special collection movies, too, that are aerospace-related, but lots of aerospace, both with the history of flight and with exploring the universe type things. So that's been a fabulous connection. It started in memory of James Korkowski, but his brother Joel, who I believe was also a pilot, died as well, and so it's partially in memory of him now too.
That's really unique for a small town library to have such a great collection. I mean, the obviously the Chanute Air Museum, which is only a couple blocks away, also has a massive research library in it, which people can use, and everything else connected with you guys. And then you host different workshops back and forth between everything. When you're looking for a library or finding a library, obviously, you know, your community, you can get a library card, and then once you get a library card in your community library, then you can check books out, right?
Yeah, and the different states do it differently. Here in Illinois, the libraries are only partially cover the state. So, for instance, in Rientoul, people who live within the city limits of Rientoul are already paying a library tax, so they can get their card for free since they're already paying to the library. But the people who live out in the country here have to pay to get their library card because none of their tax money is going to the library. So some states aren't set up that way. The libraries are funded differently, but that's how it is in Illinois. So if you aren't paying tax to a library, you can find the closest public library and pay for a card there. And the cards are, by Illinois law, to purchase a card, it's about the same as what the people who live there are paying in their property tax to the library.
Now, you also, again, I know in the Rientoul, you're also connected to other library networks. So if an individual wants to get a book, I mean, they can do interlibrary loans?
Oh, that's right. In Illinois, to my understanding, I think we were really one of the leaders in that, although I'm sure all the states have that now. But we're just really fabulous here about the interlibrary loaning. Right now, Rientoul is part of Illinois Heartland Library System, which covers the lower half of Illinois. And so we share books with all the way down to the bottom of the state, and they share books with us. And not just books, also videos, magazines, other types of media. Sometimes people even get video games. Some of the libraries have those in their collection. So it's a really great benefit. People in Rientoul use it. A lot of us know about it. So if you can't find what you're looking at your individual library, definitely ask them because they can usually get it sent in from another library.
Yeah, so good. Now, the other thing, you've got the within a library, obviously, you'll have magazine sections, you'll have an adult section, you have a children's section, you have a research section. So a lot of books can be checked out, but then in the research, you'll have research books, and these are kind of in reference books. Those are usually not, you can't usually check those out. They're left there, correct?
That's right. Now, at our particular library, for our reference section, that type of book, sometimes there'll be an instance where someone is really doing some heavy research, and so we'll make a special exception for them and let them take out something overnight, and they can bring it back the next morning. But those ones will have $1 a day overdue fine, so they're really motivated to bring them back because it's only overnight. And most libraries don't let them take those out at all. For ours, it's kind of a special thing we'll do for researchers, but it doesn't come up very often. Most people are able for that type of thing to get what they need while they're here.
That's exciting. Ron, how do people get your book? This is important. Let's talk about this.
Okay. If you go to tatepublishing.com/bookstore, it's for sale on their website, and I believe you can also get it as an ebook at this point. And right now, it's new enough, that's as far as we've gotten.
Now, the other book that you're writing that's getting ready to come out, tell us about that.
Okay, I've after Mr. Lucky, it's my intention to switch to fiction, a little bit older kids, and have some fun, and some humor, that sort of thing. I believe in words and show children what they mean in actual application type situation. The second book is called The Neighborhood. It's I use squirrels because I spent about 5 years sitting watching them before I wrote this book, their habits, what they do. The words that I promote in this book are courage, bravery, and the importance of family. And that book will be coming along before too long.
Again, it'll also be available through Tate Publishing.
Correct. Yes, and it's a little longer. You know, it's just a little more of a book.
It's not very often where I get to have the honor of having a published author and a new author come and sit on my dining room table to do a Warrior Connection. That's kind of neat. What kind of suggestions would either one of you make to somebody that's interesting in getting into writing?
Go on ahead, Ollie.
I do think it's a good idea to check with your library, see if they have a writing group in your area, and that's very helpful to talk to other writers and see what they're doing. Another thing is maybe check out some books about giving advice about writing, so you can avoid some of the pitfalls that other people who don't do their research fall into.
Yeah, I mean, Ron, obviously you involved in writing this book, there was a lot of research and observation stuff that you've mentioned.
Yes, it's surprising, and a good publisher puts quite a bit of time, effort, and money into even a short book like this. I think a person, if you're going to write, you need to know what person and what tense you're going to write in. Once you decide that, you can begin. And I think we've already discussed, don't sweat the details, just write. And you'll be able to figure out what you've done later and clean it up. And someone will help you if you need that help.
I mean, this is a neat book, and we've had it read live here and everything, and get to see it. How much time was involved in writing this short book?
Well, the first one, much longer. The second one didn't take long because the whole story was already in my head. I'd figured out how to do that. I like to write longhand for me because it gives me time to form the next paragraph and how it's going to go. I might change what I'm doing partway through, and that gives me time to do that. Well, the tense, I'll go back to that. That's pretty big. If you get that right, you'll be okay. I think, Mr. Lucky, in answer to your question, I wrote that book 3 times, and it was much longer than this. Much. This is probably a tenth of what I wrote the first time.
Wow.
But I just wanted to write, so I just wrote everything. And then I knew I would have to sort it out.
I mean, a farmer, an animal scientist. What was life like as an animal scientist, observing and take care of research animals?
Well, it's very interesting. Some of the studies were good for people. The zoonotic diseases is what they would be. Many things for animals, better medicines, better foods. Those are the good parts. And then it's kind of a tough place sometimes. But as someone once said to me, these animals do a great service for people in the end. And I believe that's true.
So as an animal scientist taking care of these animals, you have to have a real different type of disposition and everything about you, because you've got to give a lot of love to these animals at the same time. You have to be detached from them, don't you?
That's true. It's some days it's difficult to do both, but I've always liked animals a lot, and that stayed with me.
Really, an animal scientist, farmer, former Navy Reserve, lives in a small town, published author. Wow, you never know what we get to meet. Holly, as a librarian, you've got to meet a lot of incredibly unique people, haven't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They all come in. You never know what you're going to find out when they come in asking for help or offering help, do you?
Yep, that's right. That's what keeps the job interesting.
So, I mean, you mentioned something coming up special here in the library world for November. Can you finish up with that? Here, we got just a few minutes left.
Yeah, no matter where you live, you can get involved in National Novel Writing Month. If you have a computer, let me look up the web address, make sure I got it right. It's nanowrimo.com. That stands for National Novel Writing Month, so it's NA for national, NO for novel, WRI for writing, and then MO for month. So it's all the first couple letters of each one. Or if you can't remember that, if you type in National Novel Writing Month in a search engine, it'll come up with it. But there's lots of information on that. It can be done from home if you have an internet connection, or you can go into your library. A lot of people type their books. And it will have a counter on there, so you submit your book, and it'll count it up. It scrambles it, so they aren't keeping your book. They aren't going to steal it from you or read it or anything like that. They're just counting how many words are in it. And the goal is to try to get 50,000 words written in November. So from their website, it'll keep track of you and let you know how far you are on your goal. But if you don't write on the computer, if you write out longhand, Mr. Hoffman says he likes to do that. That's how I like to write myself. You can count up your words yourself and still participate in this. So it's a really exciting program that anyone can do. Here at Rantoul Public Library, we're going to be having write-in sessions on Sunday where people who are participating in this program will come to the library to work on their books. And lots of libraries do that, so you can check with your local library and see if they're participating too.
Kind of exciting. I mean, all the changes happened in my lifetime. I mean, when I was small and growing up and going to school, we didn't know how to have computers. We had a typewriter. I know when I first got hired at the University of Illinois in the 70s, I had an IBM Selectric typewriter on my desk. We didn't have computers. Eventually, we got the Apple IIs, and God almighty, today you've got more computer capability in your hand than we had in the master computer at the university.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, how is writing versus, I mean, an idea and everything, and a concept, if you're writing on longhand versus typing it on a typewriter versus typing on a computer, I mean, there's a lot of differences and changes in that, isn't there?
You know, different styles appeal to different people, and I don't know if there's a pattern, like, you know, if you like this better, you're more likely to do it that way. I'm not sure. I haven't noticed a pattern, but I have noticed in our own writers group, there's definitely, you know, some who really like to start out on the computer and type everything on the computer, and other people just feel more comfortable if they're starting it on the pen and paper, and then maybe they can move it to type it out later when they're done. And I'm not really sure what the difference is, but yeah, people are definitely different that way.
I think it's still important, but no matter what, you have to have tremendously good English skills. You have to have good spelling skills. You have to be able to write legibly. Anyway, this, and again, your thought processes. So all those fundamental skills and everything that are required for education or anything seem to be absolutely critical for writing a book, aren't they?
That's right. Although, if you do make mistakes, if you have talented people helping you, that they can help you correct them and find them. So don't let that detract you from, oh, well, I'm just not good at spelling, so I can't do it. You know, go ahead and try, and then maybe you can have a friend who's good at spelling help you with that part of it later on after you get your story down. So they are important. It's essential for your finished product. You need it. But for your weak areas, you can always get someone to help you out with it. Just go with what you are good at and try to do it, and then you can always go back and get your editor. Well, your publisher, it should be a good polished product. Don't send it off to your publisher if it has lots of spelling errors. But get a friend to help you who is good at spelling, and you'll still be okay.
So it's just going to be fun. The whole idea is just sit down and start doing it, isn't it?
That's right.
Never know where it can go and what it can lead. It can be all exciting because you can share this joy with everybody else and leave a contribution, and you never know. I mean, that one small book that's out there can change somebody's life, can't it?
Yep. Yeah, and that happens quite frequently. You'll see sometimes little news articles or something where people will talk about different books that have changed their lives. So that's absolutely true.
Yeah, so just a whole bunch of different things. Ron, you got any? We got about 2 or 3 minutes left here. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing about your book or writing, your experiences or anything? And
it's I'm so glad that I did it. It took me a while, but everything has its place and its time. And I just finished a third one, and it's in a drawer at home. And I'll send it in someday. And I had a really good time with that one because it, as you go, like most things, it gets easier.
What's the third book going to be about?
It's a second book in a series called Winter in the Neighborhood.
Wow. So we're looking at squirrels again?
Yes, we are.
Oh, cats and animals are just all around. It's kind of neat. This is all kind of exciting. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another really interesting evening. Again, a change in pace. Gentlemen, ladies, if you're in the military, warrior, whatever it is, here's some family time. Get a book, go to the library, buy a book, read a book to your kids. Get your kids to read a book to you. Either way, it works good, doesn't it, Holly?
Yes, and I'd like to say one more thing. I made a mistake earlier. I said it was NaNoWriMo.com. It's actually NaNoWriMo.org, O-R-G. So sorry about that, but if you type it in, make sure to put the O-R-G.
And we'll have this all information up for how to get the book, how to find this stuff on the Warrior Connection website in the archives for this show. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless America, and remember to take care of the vets. Thank you.
Thank you.